Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, we've avoided the temptation so far in this show to give North Korea yet another round of publicity over Kim Jong-un's latest flapping of his wings against the cage. But we will talk about it at least this once because of the what-if factor. What if when Kim Jong-un threatens to shoot preemptive nuclear missiles at American cities, he's not just yapping for his domestic political purposes? What if he were really to do it and we didn't even talk about it? So at least this once. Charles Armstrong is with us, North Korea expert at Columbia University, has published previous books about North Korea and has a forthcoming one called Tyranny of the Weak, North Korea and the World, 1950 to 1992. I guess, Charles, it'll be out just in time for summer beach reading, huh?
Yes, that's right. It's great for taking to the beach.
And it's only been about 16 months since Kim Jong-un, about 30 years old, took power after his father, the dear leader, as he was known, Kim Jong-il, died. Is he playing a different game here than his father did with these threats against the United States and against South Korea, or more of the same game?
Well, it seems like the same game on steroids. We've had an alarming escalation of rhetoric on both sides over the last couple of months. We've seen similar language, but not at this level of heated rhetoric. And certainly North Korea has never before threatened to attack the U.S. directly with its nuclear weapons. I don't think there's much chance that's going to happen, but it is pretty striking that he has threatened to do so.
And listeners, if you have any questions about the situation in North Korea, you can give us a call right now. We have one of the few Americans other than Dennis Rodman who's actually ever been there in Charles Armstrong from Columbia University. So 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Being so young and without the experience consolidating power that his father developed over time, is Kim Jong-un mostly putting on a show for domestic consumption to establish that he's a tough leader not to be messed with?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is a show, but not entirely. His father was trained for about 20 years before he took over from his father, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, in the 1990s. But also, Kim Jong-un has a very different personality, much more extroverted, much more interested in a kind of public image. He's young, he doesn't really have any political or military experience, and he seems to want to demonstrate to his own people, not least to his generals, that he's tough, that he's going to stand up to the United States. This is something not entirely new, as we've said. It often is the case that North Korea makes bellicose statements during joint South Korean-U.S. military exercises, which have been going on for the last several weeks.
Right.
Hopefully things will calm down a bit once these exercises end at the end of the month, but it could be a rough ride until then.
He said the other day that nuclear weapons are the nation's life treasure and will not be traded even for billions of dollars. Where does USAID or any other financial calculation enter into it since he put it that way?
North Korea has put on a different face now regarding its nuclear weapons. It has in the past kind of suggested that it could bargain them away. Now Kim Jong-un has said very clearly that they are going to keep their nukes. They are not a bargaining chip, and they want to be accepted as a nuclear weapons state, which, of course, the U.S. has said it is not acceptable. So where we go from here is difficult to say. I think, though, ignoring the problem is not going to make it any better. And North Korea with a handful of nuclear weapons as it is now is one thing. North Korea with 50 or 60 nuclear weapons down the road in, say, a decade is going to be much more dangerous. So we have to find a solution to this problem that will at least freeze North Korea where it is and eventually draw back its nuclear arsenal.
Philip in Chester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philip.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So when I'm looking at North Korea now, over the past couple of years, and I've been trying to pay attention because my cousin has joined the army. He was stationed in South Korea. He would tell me all these stories. So I have a decent amount of worry for him. So my question is, how serious are they with their technological capabilities? Like, how far can those missiles go? Will they actually leave North Korea? Will they fall in the water? do we know a couple of pro athletes who can throw a ball further than they can throw their missiles? Like, what? Like, what's the scare?
Great question.
Yes, that is a very good question. The missiles are certainly not very accurate. They've not been very successful in their launches until last year. There's no indication that they could hit an American target. Certainly, they couldn't reach the U.S. mainland at this point. And there doesn't seem to be any indication they have the miniaturization technology to actually launch a nuclear warhead on a missile. That's not the real problem. The real problem is the tension with South Korea. There's a new president in the South, Park Geun-hye. She's been talking very tough and has said just yesterday that South Korea will respond with appropriate force if there is any provocation from the North. And the North doesn't need a missile to hit Seoul. They can hit it with their artillery in a matter of just a few minutes. So the real danger is not that they're going to hit an American target, but that a miscalculation or a response to provocation could escalate into a shooting war with South Korea, which would be devastating.
Sven in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello. Sven, are you there? Do we have Sven? Maybe not. How about Leonard in Forest Hills? Leonard, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi.
What I'd like to know is there any speculation over whether Kim Jong-un is actually controlling what he does and says, or is he being manipulated by the long cadre of generals that have been surrounding the leader for so many years?
Or even by others. ABC News had a story this week about how Kim's older aunt and uncle may be the real power behind the throne. What would you say about any of that, Charles?
Yes, well, first of all, Kim Jong-un definitely is the one in charge. That's something that all the signs in North Korea indicate. But he's not running the country by himself. And you're right, Brian, in the article you referred to, it's probably the case that the main power behind the throne is Kim Jong-il, that is Kim Jong-un's uncle's brother-in-law, Kim Jong-un's aunt's husband, Chang Song-taek, as well as Kim Kyung-hee, the aunt, who was also made, interestingly enough, a four-star general 2 years ago at the same time as Kim Jong-un, the first female four-star general in North Korea.
And the latest development is that the North is blocking about 500 workers from the South from entering a jointly operated industrial park. This is what's been in the news headlines all this morning. What usually happens at that facility?
There are several hundred South Korean companies that operate there. It's a very important part of the North Korean economy. It's the only economic connection left with South Korea. And I would have thought that the North Koreans would have kept this going. So it's really quite counterproductive for their own economic interests to block this. This is something they wanted to keep going throughout all the difficulties with the previous South Korean administration. And again, if and when the rhetoric dies down, I would assume that this will restart. And Park Geun-hye, the South Korean president, has said that she wants economic cooperation with the North, and hopefully that will be able to resume.
Bill in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, what is the role of President Obama's policy in terms of North Korea, as well as the reset with Russia, as well as all the failures of Obama? I hear you never, ever criticize President Obama. If this were President Bush, every day I'd hear in the media how terrible President Bush is dealing with North Korea.
I certainly wouldn't say we never, ever criticize President Obama. I don't know what show you've been listening to. But is there some belligerence on the part of the U.S. administration that crosses party lines, that crosses historically, you know, from Clinton to Bush to Obama? Charles, put the president's stamp on this.
Well, Clinton was the first U.S. president to actually have a productive policy with North Korea. He negotiated an agreement in 1994, which did manage to freeze North Korea's nuclear program for several years. Bush reversed that and took a much more belligerent attitude toward the North. And the Obama administration's policy seems to have been not to have a policy. There's been a phrase, strategic patience, that Obama has used, which, as I see it, basically means ignoring the problem and hoping it'll go away. And then when it doesn't go away, when we're suddenly reminded that this is a problem, we assemble the whole U.S. military, send B-52s, nuclear submarines, B-2 bombers, and so on, which then elicits a more hostile response from the North and so on. So I don't think it's as as it were, deliberately a provocative policy as we had under Bush, but it's certainly not a very productive one going forward. Having said that, North Korea is not the easiest partner to deal with, to say the least, and it's hard to be nice to a country that threatens to drop nuclear bombs on you.
So one other issue before you go. The UN passed an arms control treaty yesterday to slow the international weapons trade, as I'm sure you know, and we'll talk later in the show about how the NRA is fighting this treaty in the United States, even though the only three votes against it yesterday were by North Korea, Iran, and Syria. Now, a certain earlier president might have called that trio an axis of evil. Why did North Korea, for its purposes, oppose that treaty?
North Korea is very intent on, as I said, maintaining its nuclear weapons, which it sees as a deterrent against the U.S., and the U.S., what North Korea says, is a hostile policy intent on destroying the regime. And this is why sending nuclear-armed carriers and so forth to North Korea doesn't help, because it only reinforces this fear that North Korea has. In the end, Brian, as difficult as it may be seen now, we have to find a negotiated way out of this problem, and either ignoring North Korea or sending everything we have in our arsenal against it is not going to help.
The real threat from North Korea, I think most people say, is not so much that they're going to send a nuclear-tipped missile to the United States or even to South Korea, most likely, because they know the world will come and get them and destroy that regime if they do anything like that. The real problem is that they might share something with Iran, which might share it with terrorists, that kind of chain, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And that's why the longer that this goes on, the more nuclear capability that they develop, the more dangerous that possibility of proliferation becomes. And that has to be stopped as soon as possible. Once it is seen or proven that they have proliferated that technology, then that would probably cross a red line for the U.S., and we could have a real disaster on our hands.
And the Bush position was essentially that no negotiations with North Korea, or not much, would matter anyway, because they're going to develop their nuclear weapons. They're already, you know, sanctioned to the moon. So what can we give them that they would actually care about that would really create a negotiated end to this?
Well, one thing we can do to start is to simply stop things where they are and say we will enter into negotiations to remove some of the economic sanctions, to move toward normalization of relations, if you stop your nuclear program where it is. They've done that before. They claim that they're going to restart the nuclear power plant north of Pyongyang. That's going to take some time. I think that's at the level of rhetoric right now. So that won't come online for a while. So at the very least, we can stop them where they are. And they have, although they don't get much press about this, they have lived up to their agreements in the past. And I think that with the right combination of incentive and not just sanctions, they could be convinced to do so again.
They have lived up? I thought their reputation is they haven't lived up to their agreements in the past.
No, they froze their plutonium production for 8 years. They stopped missile launches for 7 years, and they've shut down the main nuclear reactor for the last 7 years. So this can be done. They're not easy to deal with, but they're not completely crazy.
Charles Armstrong is a North Korea expert at Columbia University and has a forthcoming book, Tyranny of the Weak, North Korea and the World, 1950 to 1992. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, science writer Mary Roach, author of Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. Maybe you've heard her on Radiolab or this week on Fresh Air. She will tell you everything you ever wanted to know, and maybe some stuff you didn't, about human digestion. Stay with us.